afford to be. This is small town music, this is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away, a song away, a song away.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rock Solid, your comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic.
Hold your questions, please, guest.
So we have two guests. Oh. This guy needs a juice in his cans. No, that was a Jenna Jameson porn movie, Juice in My Can.
Juice in My Can.
I'm Pat Francis. Across the table from me is...
Oh, I'm Gary Lucy, and Matt Belknap is also here.
Hello.
Matt Belknap.
I'm trying to figure out which...
Oh, my cans are down, though.
Yeah.
Got a can down.
Hold on.
Can down.
Mine are hot. My cans are very hot.
Uh-oh.
I'll say.
Uh-oh. Guess who that is? Win a prize.
Pat, we don't want to grab ass around here too much at the top.
No, because we
have company.
We have two guests.
We want to get right to it, but I do want to say that I've been reading, like, all the magazines have their fall music preview things coming out now, all the new big albums that are coming out and everything. But the thing that I think is most exciting musically happening this fall.
Uh-huh.
Barbra Streisand's going on tour.
That's right.
Would you, if you had a ticket, would you go see that?
Oh yeah, I'd go see Babs just to say, just to check it off my bucket list.
Exactly.
Oh,
you think she still has the pipes?
I think she does have the. Are you talking about her cans?
No, I'm talking about her pipes.
Her singing. Yeah, I think so.
Talking about her tailpipe.
I think so.
The
I don't think if she did. Well, excuse me, sir.
Except that your bucket list has an F.
Preston.
Please. Other room,
slam from off mic.
We're better than that, Preston. Come on.
So today, Matt's here. Matt's working overtime producing because we have five people around the table. Today, the music tune jerks are going to meet the comedy film nerds.
Yeah.
Graham Elwood and Chris Mancina.
Adam,
hey, guys.
Yeah, welcome, fellas.
Great to be here, guys.
We have wanted to
great,
have you guys.
Great
on.
Might be a strong choice of words. Go
we
ahead.
Wanted to have
it's
you guys
moderately
on.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we had you in the books once, and then we bailed, and so you know we finally got you in here, so we're happy. And we're going to talk about classical music. No, we're not.
Because Pat, music and movies, they go together since the days of Al Jolson.
That's right.
Let's talk about Al Jolson
from the time even before talkies.
Yeah.
Music was part of movies.
It was played live in the movie theater.
Look at that history.
Yeah, how are you going to watch The General without a guy playing piano right next to the screen? You can't.
True that.
True.
Graham, do you know what The General is?
Yes, I do. Okay, it was one of the first movies ever made.
Absolutely it
Buster
was.
Keaton.
I know you guys don't.
Yep.
By absolutely. The looks on your faces, but yes,
absolutely
I do.
Absolutely it is.
Have you seen it? But actually, it's great. It holds up.
With Keaton Buster in The Keaton. General. App yeah. Fucking great.
Now, it's when the silent movie theater used to be the silent movie theater. You could go and see those movies with a live piano player only a few years ago.
Yeah.
And it was like the original guy from back in the day, right?
It was, yeah.
He was 114.
He looked it.
He's the Yoda of piano players.
A proper melody it is.
Come on. Impressions.
Now, you guys have your own podcast, right?
Yes.
And you have yes. You have a book? A book?
We
you
have
do.
A book?
The Comedy Film Nerd's Guide to Movies, where comedians and writers each take a separate movie genre and break it down, analyze the genre, and then do a top 10 and a bottom 10 for every chapter.
Now, you guys, everybody loves to go to the movies, but what is that tipping point of when you become a film nerd, would you say?
Well, when you know, like, what The General is, that is what makes you a film nerd.
I was and thinking, you've seen it.
Yeah, you've seen
live
it
piano
several times.
Yep.
That's what makes you a film nerd. I think
and could you please answer in the form of Jeff Foxworthy?
You know you're a film nerd when you know Greedo is a pussy. I actually met, this is so funny you said that, because I was just in Philly, and Chris and I are going back there September 5th through the 8th. And plug machine, Johnny plug machine. And there was this, like, Southern guy who was at the show who was a big, like, I obviously, you know, you go on the road and you meet what the podcast fans are, and the film nerd fans, you know, there's kind of a specific type, but there's also, I get surprised all the time. There's this big redneck dude, and he was just like, yeah, man, Han shot first, that Greedo was a pussy. He just went, he was so knowledgeable. He's like, hey, man, the force binds us all, ain't no midichlorians, all that nonsense. And I was just like, this guy's amazing.
Could you sign my kitten hand? hands.
Yeah, you sound my kitten hand. Y'all are great. I love them dumb accents y'all do on the show. We're all like, hello, governor. I love it.
He's going on about the Kurosawa and things.
Yeah. Well, y'all know that Seven Samurai, basically the Magnificent Seven Western, was based on Kurosawa's Seven Samurai. It's the same principle, man. You Brenner's great.
You might be. If
then you found that he was on call because he was a neurosurgeon.
He was a neurosurgeon. Oh, yeah. Well, gotta go.
Ain't rocket science. What the hell?
Yeah, I gotta go fix a brain.
So, Pat, what are we gonna do today?
How we're gonna talk about our favorite soundtrack songs. Now, I had requested original soundtrack songs, which three of the four of us did.
Pat,
there's a guy.
I'm sorry.
There's one guy who, but I got to tell you, but the things he did pick are good anyway. So we're going to give him a pass. And
because here's what I
think.
His
name's Graham Elwood.
All right. Since I know, from the moment I walked in, you've been on my ass about this. No. And I knew what you meant. You wanted original songs. But to me, when you just say soundtrack,
right.
The sound, like the soundtrack of the new Dark Knight movie, I loved it. I loved how it was used and not used, and so it's not just, you know, Eye of the Tiger or whatever.
Like pop songs.
Songs. Yeah. Because it's nice when a pop song, but to me, like,
but that's more the score than a song.
In some cases, technically, yes, but in the two examples I picked, mm-hmm. that score and those songs.
Well, those are iconic, so we'll get to those. And I understand why you picked those. And
I can't wait to hear the picks now. I'm intrigued.
It's already controversial. This up,
your choices.
That's what
Graham,
I do.
You, Chris,
oh,
me.
Damn. We're out of time, guys. We're going to.
Wow.
You know, when
a
you have
7-minute podcast.
Yeah, when you have four people on it, it goes quickly. I thought we were going to play some songs.
Well,
I guess
you
we
need room for commercials.
So, Gary, we'll just go around the table. We'll start with Gary.
Oh, we'll start with me. Okay.
We'll come to me. We'll go to Graham and then Chris. Want to do it that way?
Okay.
Go around the horn?
That sounds good.
What were you
going to
say? You had a different take on it.
It'll be easier with... No, that's your way is less confusing.
Okay.
Now, lately, soundtracks are... It's just like maybe like some, you know, leftover tracks from a popular band, you know, that they try to put together and sell you a thing.
Or it's just a collection of popular songs.
Yes, exactly. With Bad to the Bone is usually worked in there.
Yeah, Bad to the Bone is usually worked in there, definitely.
The
most overused song in soundtrack history.
Since Inagata DeVita.
It is the You Do the Math
of music.
Yep.
But this is kind of more 60s style. The Weitz Brothers, who gave us... American Pie, they did a great movie with Hugh Grant called About a Boy.
Oh, that's a great movie.
And they handed the soundtrack over to a film named Badly Drawn Boy. And this is the hit single from that. It's called Something to Talk About.
All right.
Rock solid. You guys know this? You guys like this movie? Soundtrack, you will love that.
Thought we were going to hear the whole entire album for
Sorry.
A second, Gary.
Never felt so long.
That's a really good movie. Hugh Grant and Toni Collette. And
breaks your heart, Toni Collette.
It's so great. And that the minute I heard the opening like bars of that song, it brought me. And this is what a good soundtrack does. It brought me to the emotional place I was when I saw that movie of. Being raised by a single mom and agreeing with what this kid was going through, that argument that Hugh Grant is having with Toni Collette, where he's like, "You daft hippie," you know, and he's like, "You're sending your kid to the slaughter," and I was like, that's again what makes a good theme song? Is it emotionally brings you to the movie, what you got from that movie, where you were at in your life when you saw it? And that's why that's an excellent film, I think.
I was just getting chills hearing your recreation of it. That is
no, I like that. No, this is why these guys are here, because we want film talk interspersed with Toon Talk.
Toon Talk.
All right, who's up? Is that you, Pat?
Yes.
Sunday's at the 5.
I'll also say that movie is based on a Nick Hornby novel. And
who
he
knows
wrote
a little something about music.
And he wrote High Fidelity, too, which is also
a great movie.
That's another great
And
film.
On the flip side, also same director as Golden Compass.
One strike against.
There you go.
And you can see where, like, hey, some directors are really good at certain things, not so good at others.
And I love to Hugh Grant, his narration, where he's like, I break my life into units of time. 20-minute units of time. Going to buy CDs. One unit. Getting my hair cut. You know, he's just, and the great thing, too, which relates to this, because it's there's a music kind of element to the film, is he's rich because his dad wrote some cheesy jingle.
Yeah, novelty song, yeah.
And he'll like, it's like, look who's coming round the bend, Santa and his reindeer man.
It's one of those movies that has such great moments in it. Like, you know, you just, as the relationships progress, it's a really good movie. I remember the one moment where, you know, they're exchanging gifts, and the kid gives Hugh Grant's character a book about taking care of kids, and he goes, is this a joke? And he goes, yeah, all right, it's not bad.
Hey guys, 19 more songs. Okay.
Sorry,
that's okay.
This
I'm
is
kidding.
What we do.
We're gonna go that deep on every single one.
Yeah, we won't be able to go that deep on that, because it was the opening one, and now the rest of the songs we're just gonna go, yep, I liked it, and we'll move around.
Oh wow. All
no
right.
I'm kidding. This is the first song I picked. I don't know another song that is more essential to the movie itself, because if you don't like this song, you need to like this song, because the whole entire movie is about this song, and they did it perfectly.
They nailed it
because every time you heard it in the movie, you got into it the way you're supposed to. This is that thing you do. That was the O'Neaters.
Yeah. Zahn is great.
Yeah,
in that movie.
I love that movie. It's such a feel good movie. I just love how they captured the time period, and I just love that it becomes a hit because the drummer just happens to speed it up on his own, and it's I love the song. I love the movie.
I mean, Tom Hanks directed. I think it's one of the first movies he directed.
Yeah.
He wrote it.
The first one.
And he said in an interview, I just wanted to do a movie about all the bands that weren't the Beatles.
Yeah,
and we all know this in showbiz, all those near misses, and it was great.
Yeah, it's fun to be in the game. You don't have to be a success. Yeah, you just got to play. Now, the kid who plays the drummer, hugely appealing. I don't know why
Tom Everett Scott. I know. Such a great. I don't know why he didn't really break out big, because I thought he was usually appealing too.
It's weird. I know. Steve Zahn broke out of that.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
He'd done a bunch of things before that. Steve Zahn was like an indie, every indie movie.
Yeah, like Suburbia.
His cred was slowly growing. In fact, that's probably what helped him get The Thing That You Do.
Yeah, when I saw That Thing You Do, I thought, and I saw Tom Everett Scott, I go, wow, that guy would be a great Peter Parker.
But totally.
The casting companies are not calling. That's a casting company, right?
That's a casting company.
They're not calling me.
Sears casting company.
Whenever it's on, I always watch it from whenever it's on, and I'm hoping to catch that one speech that Liv Tyler gives towards the end about anyway, it's good. Just watch that thing you do.
Oh, Tom Hanks
you're
at
not,
the end when
you're
he's
not going to recite the whole speech.
I was going to have to make it.
That's a great speech. And then when Tom Hanks sums up everyone in the band.
Yep.
And then when he says, "I'm not out of order, you're out of order." That's
the greatest part.
Awesome. This town needs an enema. Yeah. Hilarious.
Graham, you want to look and see what your first song is? I'm playing him in the order you sent to me. Do you remember what it is?
I believe it is.
You can look right here.
The...
That one?
Yeah.
Okay.
You want me to talk about it?
Sure.
All right.
Ramp it up.
This is... All right. This is one of these...
Hot 100.
Hot 100 flame shags. Where... As we were just talking about, you took a little umbrage at the fact that it's not an actual pop song. But it, to me, it's an iconic thing from a movie, and it sums up to me what the whole thing is.
It's a danger zone from Top Gun.
It's a danger zone. It's highway
playing,
to the
playing with
zone.
The boys.
Metal under tension, begging you to touch and go.
Oh, but
go.
Trust me, Graham has one of those in this list. So trust me, it's a killer. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it's one of those movies, again, that the minute I hear the music, I know exactly what it does. It brings me to the place where I was when I first saw this film. I was like a teenager, and I love the story. And I know some people, it's based on the movie, it's The Natural. And so a lot of people, like Alan Havey, who wrote in our book, hates the movie because it goes against what the Bernard Malamud book does. But Barry Levinson, who made the film, was very much like, look, this, we aren't making the book page for page, we're just making a different version of it. And they gave it a Hollywood ending, which is a lot of, usually I would be like, why? I'd be so mad,
right?
But it's just amazing, and Robert Redford is great in it, and it's got Wilford Brimley and I forget the other coach's name. God, no, this is stupid. But anyway, it's the theme from The Natural.
Let's hear it. Randy Newman.
Randy played guitar.
Yeah, and if you actually watch the movie and get the actual orchestra version rather than that 80s disco version that you guys got.
I took this right off the soundtrack. I did. On iTunes.
That was the radio edit.
Yeah, that was.
I took that right off the iTunes. I bought that on iTunes, natural soundtrack.
Okay, you're lying.
We faded out before
I'm not.
The vocal came in.
I'm totally not lying.
You got a natural in me.
Baseball is great.
You got a natural in me.
No, but the movie, the cast of this film, Glenn Close, Kim Basinger, Wilford Brimley, Barbara Hershey, Robert Prosky, Richard Farnsworth.
All from memory.
Which is, yeah, I'm not looking at my IMDb app. And Richard Farnsworth, who's one of my favorite underrated actors, is one of my favorite movies, The Gray Fox. So I love The Natural, and just hearing that, I got chills, and it reminded me, it was one of those movies I would watch when I would like need inspiration when I was like in high school or college.
Get fired up.
Yeah, and it's a great story, and he's this broken down guy that gets a second chance, which is why we do our podcast.
That's why we're all here today.
Chris Mancini is up. Do you remember what your first song is?
I don't remember the order.
Does that give you a hint?
Make it a hint.
No. The
Crow. Oh, yeah, this one. Okay.
Why don't you just say
this
it?
The movie Legend was
a...
Do you
know what song I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
It's Legend.
Yes.
Okay.
I remember the soundtrack to this movie. The whole thing, Legend, was like a Brian Ferry, Tangerine Dream. It was like a big deal. It was like it was one of the first times they were not only selling the movie, but no, you got to hear the soundtrack with Tangerine Dream and Brian Ferry and John Anderson doing vocals. And the movie turned out not so great. However, the music to this movie was really, really amazing, and it each song kind of blended into the other one. The Brian Ferry song stood out a little bit. Is Your Love Strong Enough? Was that the Brian Ferry song? But the one I picked was Love by the Sun, which is a Tangerine Dream song with John Anderson from Yes doing vocals, and it just kind of captured for me like that childhood fascination with fairy tales and legends and all that stuff. It's all the stuff that the movie didn't capture was actually captured into this song.
And I will say I swear to God, I bought this from iTunes too. This has Katie Campbell on vocal. It says it's credited to Brandon K. Vereau and Katie Campbell, but it's still a great song.
John Anderson sounded like
that. Yeah, it sounded a lot like
this is like some song pop bullshit. Yeah, where they pulled a remake on you. What?
Totally not.
Why is Jessica Simpson singing and The Little Mermaid?
And, and if it is John Anderson singing, no one until now has bothered to send an email to correct it.
That's right.
All right, here we go.
It's called.
No, that's John Anderson. You know what I'm starting to remember now? Actually, it comes back at the end of the soundtrack, and John Anderson does like the reprise.
End credit theme or something?
Yeah, yeah. That's where it is. That's definitely was not John Anderson.
Here's my story about Legend. I had never seen it. So they just released it on Blu-ray this past year. So I'm like, I've never seen it. Buy it on Blu-ray.
It looks amazing.
Buy it. I bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Watched it.
Yes.
Sold it on eBay. Glad I saw it, but...
great practical effects.
Yes, great practical effects. And but just didn't...
when
just
you
didn't
have to
get,
say
get...
practical effects, movie, you are...
Yo, we always find the silver lining somewhere. Yes. Sometimes you got to dig really deep.
Right.
Great. But, makeup, you,
they,
guys,
hey, people
makeup.
Work just as hard making a bad movie as they do making a good movie.
Probably harder because they're trying to save it.
That's right. You're probably
like, oh,
right.
This is horrible. What can we do?
Yeah. Gary, Tim Curry was in that makeup chair for probably 6 to 8 hours a day.
Yes.
Thinking this is going to be great.
Great. Yeah. And he looks incredible.
Speaking of bad movies.
Yes.
Brendan Fraser was in a remake a few years back with what's her face? The model. You know, the model.
From yeah, what's her face?
What's her face?
Yeah. Called Bedazzled. And
Elizabeth Hurley.
Elizabeth Hurley.
Stunning.
Actually, it wasn't that bad, but if you got to go back and check out the original. It's like a Faust story.
It's
where
with Peter Cook and Dudley Moore,
Peter
right?
Cook
fantastic.
And Dudley Moore.
Yeah.
And Peter Cook plays the devil. Dudley Moore is in love with this woman that he works with at his restaurant. And so he signs a deal with the devil. He wants the woman to fall in love with him. But when you make a deal with the devil, Pat... He gives you what you ask for, but not always what you want.
Doesn't always work out. It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. You think. Yeah. So one of his wishes is he wants to be a pop star, Dudley Moore, because then, you know, everybody loves pop stars. She'll love me. She'll love me. So the devil makes him a pop star. He's on Top of the Pops or whatever, and he sings this song. He's pouring his heart out. I think the song is called Love Me. It's like really desperate and everything, and people are screaming and stuff. But then right after that, the devil comes out with his band, and he sings.
Of course he does.
He sings, and he's a little more detached, but his song is way cooler, and it stands up to this day. There's a great cover by Bongwater of this song. It's called Bedazzled, and we have the original version for you right here. Is Peter Cook on Rock Solid. So groovy.
Ooh, I'd be
so you said.
You knock me out.
I don't want you.
You blast me up.
I don't need you.
You burn me up.
I don't love you.
You plug me in.
Leave me alone.
It's like a.
Then he says, "You fill me with inertia." See, and then he's playing hard to get. Then the girls go even crazier for the devil. Sorry, Dudley Moore.
Basic psychology.
And you also watch that scene, and you're like, "Oh, there's got to be some inspiration from Austin Powers."
Yes,
as you're watching this scene, like, okay,
for sure, like 60% of Austin Powers
right?
was from
that scene.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that brings us around the horn to Pat Francis.
All right, I'm going to go to 1999. This is a song that was nominated for an Academy Award. But it was beaten by the fucking Phil Collins Tarzan song, You'll Be in My Heart.
Amazing.
I cannot believe that this song did not win. This is from Toy Story 2. Oh, it's called When She Loved Me.
Oh,
it's,
this is so good.
I know, written by Randy Newman, recorded by Sarah McLachlan. And this is the part of the movie where cowgirl Jessie is thinking about the moment when her owner stopped playing with her. And I might cry right now. Oh, this gets me. When She Loved Me. Go ahead. On Rock Solid.
When somebody loved me, everything was beautiful. Every hour spent together lives within my heart. And when she was sad, I was there to dry her tears. And when she was happy, so was I. When she
Oh, that's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
That was beaten out by the thunder drumming of adult contemporary artist Phil Collins.
You know, you never knew Randy Newman actually had range after listening to songs like Cars.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe he needs other people to interpret it.
Maybe he needs other animated soundtracks to work on.
Yeah. But that song gets me every time.
Oh.
I'm going to move around the horn to, I don't even know what to say.
You need a minute.
Short people have no reason to live.
Graham, do you know what your next song is? You want me to tip it for you? It's this one?
Yeah. Okay. Now, this is another one that you probably went, Graham didn't understand what I was asking.
This is a great song, though. I'm going to tell you, this is a great song, but the movie is from 1999. The song's from 1966, so you missed it by 33 years.
So I was right in the wheelhouse.
But
this is another one, though. When you hear it, you're like,
it's great.
Right into that
exactly,
movie.
Exactly, and that's what I was doing. I was like, what movies, again, like, when I hear this song, what does it take me to? And this is Making Time by Creation, which takes me into Rushmore, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
It's a great movie.
And it's a,
own it.
It's the best Wes Anderson movie. And he makes a lot of great movies.
Here it is.
Making time.
You know, hearing this song made me want to go and listen to some more songs by The Creation, see what else they have in the catalog.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very specific time when they made that in the 60s. But the thing I also wanted to get into, which is something that maybe a lot of people aren't aware of, is Mark Mothersbaugh did the original music for that, but
right.
He also picked all of the songs, like this song from Creation,
nice.
That were like, there's a bunch of great songs in there. There's the Cat Stevens song.
There's a Peter and Gordon.
Yeah. Ooh.
Is there a Kink song in there, maybe?
Yeah, there is a Kink song in there. And again, that's an integral part for me of making a film is, and it's, you know, filmmaking is a collaborative art, and you assemble, when a movie's done correctly, you assemble all of these experts who are in all their various fields, the cinematographer, the makeup, the costume design, all that stuff. And soundtrack, you know, music selection is a huge thing. It's also, there's a business side of it, the clearance aspect.
Yeah.
How much can you get these rights for and all that stuff. And Mark Mothersbaugh, you know, these songs that he's selecting in several of the Wes Anderson movies are, he's finding the less popular song from a really popular artist, the little more obscure song, and which is what the characters in Wes Anderson movies, specifically Rushmore, is, you know, Max is this weirdo, obscure kid that's a go-getter, but he's just off a little bit. And it speaks to the whole the whole piece. It paints the whole picture.
Yeah, that's still my favorite. That's my favorite Wes Anderson movie still.
It's flawless. That movie is flawless.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, I'll watch that anytime. But did it pull you out of Royal Tenenbaums at the end there when it's Hey Jude?
Yeah, well, that's the problem with Royal Tenenbaums, which is still a good movie. Yeah. I mean, his misfires are still excellent. But the problem with Royal Tenenbaums is he had all these big-name actors in it. The whole cast was big-name, whereas, like, obviously, Bottle Rocket, there's no names in there other than James Caan, and Bill Murray is really the only name in Rushmore, which makes it. Bill Murray's character needed to be kind of a name because his character had this stature, but the Royal Tenenbaums was all these famous people who you already sort of know them doing something else, and now they're trying to be Wes Anderson-y.
Right,
I would have just cast Gene Hackman and left the rest of
them. A lot of those actors too in Royal Tenenbaums, they were getting a little bit too old for that shit.
They said that.
Yeah,
Danny Glover. The who do you think's better, Wes Anderson or Quentin Tarantino at song?
Well, I think Tarantino, when he writes the script, he knows the song he wants and demands to get it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think they're but
you have to give it to Tarantino because he's thinking the whole thing because
in advance.
In advance, and this is not a slight on Wes Anderson. He just hands it over to like guys like Mark Mothersbaugh, which is fine.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
But like, and Tarantino just has like more than one iconic needle drop, you know, Miserloo you know, the thing from Kill Bill, whatever that crazy Japanese song is, just like so.
And Tarantino, all four of us have just dismissed him out of this because it's just, we just know.
He's playing a different game.
Yeah, he's playing a different game, so he's not even included in any of our list today. But the only problem with Mark Mothersbaugh is every time Wes Anderson is like, seriously, working in a coal mine again? We're not doing it. Keep your Devo stuff out of here.
And stop wearing the hat.
That's right.
It's weird. Yeah,
put a plant in that and call it a day. Chris Mancini's up.
This next one is from the movie Last Action Hero.
Chris pulling songs from great movies.
Hero. This is why I picked those. They're fascinating because when you have a good song in a horrible movie, it sticks out even more. And Last Action Hero was one of those movies that I was so excited to see. Like Schwarzenegger, it's like postmodern. It's got this cool fantasy element. It's going to have a ton of cool action in it. And it was none of those things. It was a horrible movie that was a complete misfire, although the soundtrack was a weird mix of like prog metal and all the stuff written specifically for the movie, and I listened to the first half of it over and over and over again. I had like Queensryche and Megadeth, and I was like, "Yeah, this is a great soundtrack." They should have just let Dave Mustaine make the movie,
right?
At that point.
And speaking of Dave Mustaine, I don't like Megadeth, but I do like his politics.
Sure,
so that's, I just want to clear it up right there.
Yeah, and the guy that wrote "Peace Sells, But Who's Buying?"
Right,
and
"Killing
and
the, Is My Business and Business Is Good."
Yeah, and then the song "Angry Again." I'm like, "How are you supporting Romney again?" I would have loved to have been in the room when that transformation happened.
Right.
Like, I just wrote Peace Sells about anti-establishment and stuff, and now, okay, you know what? I need a tax cut.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, I'm rich.
Yeah.
So this is from Last Action Hero, Megadeth.
Angry Again, because it's always, you know, Dave Mustaine at that point was constantly angry about being kicked out of Metallica, everything. I mean, so you felt like, oh, he's just writing a song about how he feels.
That's why he came around.
And he's a ginger. He's got red hair. He's a ginger.
Yeah,
so that's just another reason.
The only confusing part of that title is the again. So you were not angry at some point? How is this? But you're constantly uninterrupted anger.
It folds like a contortionist. Slide of hand and quick its change. The old tricks have been free of range.
Magic ticket my ass, McBain.
Yeah, I think we've all felt that way.
Yeah.
Constantly.
I felt that way when I saw Graham's List of Songs.
Yeah.
Angry again.
I had to drive from the beach to the valley. That's what I did.
No traffic Sunday. Go ahead. It's you're up, Gary Lucy. I love these. I love how it's going today. We've had instrumentals. We've had Megadeth. We've had Tears from Sarah McLachlan.
I'm not going to lie. This one's a bit of a downer.
Uh-oh.
But it's another one of those Highway Robbery at the Oscar things. Nominated for Best Original Song in 97, I believe. Loses to some hack who we've never heard of again. Celine Dion.
Dion?
Titan? Something.
Oh, that one of those boat movies.
The boat movie.
Speed 2?
Yes,
Speed 2.
I think I know exactly what you're going to play. You're going to play Go the Distance from Hercules.
No!
No? Okay.
Close. Yeah,
that is underrated, by the way. I don't like Bloaten. What's that guy's name? Michael Bolton?
Michael Bolton.
Bloaten.
Bloaten.
I went Michael. With the given name.
Bloaten.
You just invented a great Mad TV character.
Yes, you have.
Let's go back in time.
So I know what you're going to play. So let's
That's when Michael Bublé goes, God, that guy is awful.
I know.
Of course, I'm representing Elliot Smith from Good Will Hunting and Miss Misery.
I'll think it through the day with some help from Johnny Walker Red. Send the poison brain down the drain to put bad thoughts in my head. The tomb tick is torn in half and a lot of nothing to do. Do you miss me? Miss misery like you say.
Awesome soundtrack to get. It's got all your Elliot Smith standards on there, Between the Bars and Say Yes and stuff. It's got that, and it's got the Foo Fighters doing their version of Baker Street.
You know it's a downer song when the singer's whispering.
Again, it's one of those songs that emotionally brings me right to the place of that film, and that song just captures the pain and torment that's masked, you know, by Will Hunting's, you know, tough guy street persona. That song is like, that is the theme of what is internally going on with him, his abandonment issues, how he can't commit to Skylar, this awesome girl, and he's afraid. And then that they play that song as he says, fuck it, I'm going to go drive out to California. I got to go see about a girl.
Yes.
And there's that great line where Robin Williams goes, oh man, he stole my line. I know that wasn't in the script. That's a comic. Oh, he stole my line. A little ironic coming from Rob Williams.
Saw that on Christmas Day of 1997 at the Lloyd Center in Portland. It was like a Portland celebration. It was Gus Van Zandt and Elliot and America's Love Affair with Matt Damon began on that day.
As it did.
Excellent, excellent actor. Great
it's
movie.
It's never ended.
And it hasn't ended.
And America's Befuddlement with Ben Affleck. Career choices.
How do you like them apples?
That's crazy.
It's a great line.
It really went sideways for Minnie Driver from there somehow. What happened?
You know, she's amazing in that. It is curious. You know,
she's great in Gross Point Blank.
She had a bunch of good movies, and then who knows? You know, that part of it might just be, you know, Hollywood's like...
She kind of, 29? Get her out of here.
Yeah, exactly. Oop, she's going to be 30. Yeah. Kill her. Renew. That's a Logan's Run reference. But there's also a great Casey Affleck and Cole Hauser as a great... Those guys are great knucklehead buddies of his. And you see,
Cole Hauser is my favorite bully in film history. Oh. Like Dazed and Confused. I mean, it's just awesome.
Well, he learned from the best, Wings.
He's got
his dad, Wings Hauser.
He's got a great scene in there where Casey Affleck goes, quit antagonizing me. And he goes, ha ha ha. And then you just see a quick thing in his eyes where he's like, I'll kill you. I'll kill you, Casey Affleck.
Oh, that's sweet. Nice. Pat Francis.
Hello. We're going to jump into it. This is a small movie. It's just a fun little teen movie that I like. And since I worked in many a record store throughout my life, this is a movie called Empire Records.
Yes.
And this is a song written by the Gin Blossoms with Marshall Crenshaw. And this is from the same ilk as That Thing You Do. This is called Till I Hear It From You.
I didn't ask, you shouldn't have told me. At first I'd laugh, but now sinking in fast, whatever lips on me. Well, baby, I don't wanna take advice from fools. I'll just figure everything is cool until I hear it from you.
That went to number 15 on the Hot 100 pop charts.
Pat, methinks you owe Graham an apology. Like, wasn't that a hit that was happened to be on the soundtrack? It wasn't Vice Versa?
It was from their first album.
No, it's not. So fuck all of you guys.
Jim Blossom.
That's an original. That's not
for the movie.
That's not on any Jim Blossom's album. That is only on the soundtrack and maybe a greatest hits now of the Jim Blossoms.
Right.
But no, that was
that's fascinating. I did not know that.
Well, you shouldn't have spoken up with such anger.
Don't
make me go Mustaine on you.
Sorry about that.
Again.
I think, Gary, what you were thinking of is every other Gin Blossom song.
Yes!
They all sound the same.
Exactly. That's what you were thinking. And that I'm fine with.
Yeah. You hear that and I just go, the 90s.
Yeah,
every time I hear Gin Blossom.
But to me, when
I got to tie a plaid shirt around my waist and go stand on a roof.
Yeah, but the Gin Blossoms aren't in that 90s. They're in the 90s with the Counting Crows.
No, but the style, I mean, like if you saw that movie, was so 90s, you know?
Yeah.
It was like crazy.
That's when it was cool to get famous and then kill yourself.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
I love
that. That should come back.
We're going to go to Graham, and here's your hint. That's your hint for this song. You know what it is?
Yeah,
okay.
I do.
This is the original version. Just like the Natural was.
This is the same thing. This is going back into my childhood, and this is a song that the minute you hear it, you know exactly what it is. I'm not even going to tell you what movie, because as soon as you hear it, you will know what I'm talking about.
Star Wars.
That's Jaws.
Jeez, I'm not quite sure what this is, and I can read it right in front of me.
Mystic Pizza.
No, this is.
You can see the letters flying out into the screen at you.
This elicits emotion from me. Anger.
It's John Williams. And there you go. That's good. And again, it's that thing like, it's so big, it's so Hollywood.
Yeah.
But it was Superman. That's who Superman is. It
had to be big.
It had to be big. And they had the cast is amazing. A little curious about
Otis,
the Otis character. That's like, awful. All right, that was dumb. But Gene Hackman's a great Lex Luthor. Yeah. Marlon Brando is a crazy Kyle, or Jor-El rather.
Kidder could have been a little hotter for me. I like a little bit hotness in my Lois.
I don't know.
I think she had it. She had that sexy.
What year was that?
78.
She was 70s hot.
She was 70s hot.
Nah, and Richard,
I go more Lauren Hutton for my 70s hot.
Oh,
look at you.
But Lauren Hutton, you know what? Lauren Hutton is too classy.
Too sophisticated.
She's too
sophisticated. You should have emailed the casting company if there was email back then.
I could have written maybe sent them a telegram.
Yes you should have.
But no, that's an iconic. So that's a good that's a good choice.
Yeah.
I want to show you something, though, while you're here. Look, I want you to look right here.
And for our studio audience.
Look at this. Okay. That's the Natural soundtrack. And look right here. Look what I purchased. The Natural from the original soundtrack. So don't give me this bullshit that I played a version that you didn't agree
You're
with.
You're right. Nothing on the internet is incorrect.
This is on iTunes.
iTunes couldn't be incorrect.
No.
Big companies are never wrong.
Well, it says the Palm Strike Dance Party is the number one selling album.
So well, that's right.
Okay.
It's also available as a ringtone.
Oh, that's good.
Palm Strike Dance Party.
Mancini.
This next one is actually from a good movie. I thought I would get the bad ones out of the way first. This is from the single soundtrack, which is also, when you have Cameron Crowe, you know the soundtrack's going to be a huge part of the movie.
Right.
And it was a mix of original songs and then a couple that were pulled from just popular songs. So I picked Dyslexic Heart because it was a pop song, but it was the kind of pop song that you're like, okay, it was Paul Westerberg.
Right.
That when he did it, it was like, I understand pop songs, and I'm making almost like a meta pop song. It's like, here's my version of a pop song. So it was like, it's light, it's fun, it's bouncy, but at the same time, it's like, he knows that this is light and fun and bouncy, and it has that kind of like, I know what I'm doing kind of wink in it, which I kind of liked.
So hard to read. I misconstrue what you mean. Slip me a napkin.
second, and now let's start. Is this your name or a doctor's eye chart? I try and comprehend you, but I got a dyslexic heart. I ain't dying to offend you. I've got a dyslexic heart.
I had totally forgotten all about this song until it popped on your list, and I was like, oh, I'm so glad that I've been reintroduced to this song. That is a great song.
Talk about 90s. And, that goes up against Gin Blossoms for like ultimate
90s. It actually does. Absolutely. It actually does.
I should point out that proceeds from today's show do go to the American Heart Dyslexia Association. Dublub. But Paul Westerberg, he's like no one loves replacements more than me, but he's definitely one of those guys. Greatness called, and he was in the shower. I think you know what I mean.
Yeah,
just like just barely, like he almost got there on the last ring.
I know.
You know, he's got some great solo work.
He's the O-Nighters of real life.
Yes, that's right. And people who love him, but he just doesn't have that household name value.
Yeah, it's the Ramones kind of felt sorry for him.
I know. Yeah, they're driving around a packing van.
Do you remember what the name of the high school was in Heather's?
Westerberg High.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Named after him. So he's got that going for him.
Just guessed. Wow.
He's got that going for him.
Exciting.
Gary Lucy.
Oh, hey, that's me.
are we on NPR? I really feel like this is an NPR.
My sweaty balls.
Matt, let's skip ahead to my next one.
Well, yours aren't in order. So
okay, sorry.
No skipping.
Never mind. On my list. Woody Allen, you got to hand it to this guy.
He likes to sleep with his daughter.
But
and he likes the Gin Blossoms.
And he likes the Gin Blossoms. He's kind of a genius. In the 60s.
Maybe we're going to drive around this town. chase the cops around.
That's the worst Woody Allen impression.
About
you've ever
to ask who you are right now.
He made this movie in the 1960s.
Wait a minute, Woody Allen makes movies?
Yes.
Okay.
It was called
Allison Road. I remember that movie.
Yeah. You know what that is? That's Hey Jealousy.
He went to Arizona State.
He went to ASU. He made this movie called What's Up, Tiger Lily.
Okay.
And what it was is, this is in the mid-60s. He takes a Japanese spy movie and rewrites all the dialogue and dubs it in and makes it a comedy about they're trying to find the egg salad recipe or something like that. And
it's basically MST3K.
Yes, exactly.
I will watch any pre-pedophile Woody Allen movies that are out there. So I'm on board with this one.
So there's this one scene that takes place in a happening Tokyo nightclub. Everyone's got, you know, in this mid-60s, everyone's got like skinny ties and sunglasses. Everyone looks like Chow Yun-Fat or something like that. And they're just like dancing really hard and frugging and freaking out and go-go dancing and everything. But Woody Allen doesn't put in any like surfy spy music. No. He gets the happy bluegrass sounds of the Love and Spoonful to play in that club. So they cut to people dancing like that, and then they're hearing this song.
Well, I went down the hill about 12 o'clock. I ran right back and I got me a pole. I'm going down to the fishing pole, and you can come fishing all the time. Have you been fishing all the time? I'm going fishing too. When you rent your life,
I think that's the most Muppets that a song can sound like without having actual hands up the area.
And that song that's Love and Spoonful. What's that song called again?
Fish and Blues, I think.
Fish and Blues.
Yeah.
Love it. It's a great movie.
Interesting, yeah. And, you know, sometimes it works a little bit more as an idea than an actual thing, but it's, you just got to hand it to the guy, you know, for just even doing it, attempting it, you know, throwing it out there.
Especially in the 60s, and then, I remember in the middle of the movie, like, they interview him, would you like to tell everyone what's going on, Mr. Woody Allen?
Yeah.
And he just goes, no. And then they come back to the movie.
Yeah, crazy.
I feel like, in a weird way, though, it was easier to do that in the 60s, because it's like, anything goes. People are just crazy.
Man, free
crazy.
Love.
We're on pot.
It was just, there was
drugs.
The rules were out the window.
You could edit the way you wanted, didn't matter.
Yeah, man.
Free love editing.
Yeah, fuck Woody Allen, come to think of it. That's what
seriously.
That's the takeaway. That's what you're saying.
The year is 1995.
Yeah.
Jonathan Demme makes a movie that is very timely for the period.
Johnny Demme.
It's about AIDS. streets of, it's called Philadelphia.
The Gin Blossoms stepped up.
The Gin Blossoms step up with a song called AIDS Rude.
AIDS Jealousy.
So, but this is a...
AIDS Jealousy!
AIDS Jealousy. So this is... this is the first time Bruce Springsteen was asked to write an original
the first time?
Song.
Wait a minute. How many times have
How many times did they ask him?
I bet other people had asked him before then, right? How many times, Bruce?
This was the... let me tell you something. You know, I'm sitting around, and a lot of times people call me up on the...
I'm sorry. Are you doing a Woody Allen impression?
On the telephone. And they'll say... this cracks me up. They'll say, Bruce, would you like to write a song for our movie? And I say, how much does it pay? And they go, it pays $1,000.
So Bruce Springsteen, he's from the South. It's
yeah.
Like he was Arkansas?
Yes, that's exactly how Bruce talks. So this is Streets of Philadelphia. This is Bruce singing as if he were a gay man. So he actually adopts a character in this song. And
sure he does.
He's
kind of a Fred Schneider from the B-52's right. accent that he adopts.
So let's hear a little
bit. Three door slam.
I was bruised and battered. Couldn't tell what I felt.
Oh.
Just I was terrible. Bruised and battered. I couldn't tell what I felt. I was unrecognizable to myself. Saw my reflection in a window and didn't know my own face. Oh brother, gonna leave me wasting away on the streets of Philadelphia.
I think that captures the essence. It's a very sparse song.
I think we just experienced that thing Graham was talking about the transportive power of music.
Right.
How we're just grab-assing and giggling, yeah, and then we're like, oh shit, this is heavy. I just remembered. We were back in the theater watching that and like, fuck, this is a good movie.
And that won the Academy Award for Best Song in 93 and had a lot of competition. It was up against The Day I Fall in Love from Beethoven Second.
as someone who's from Philadelphia, I will say that movie really captured what it feels like to walk around in Philadelphia. Yep. And they actually did a really nice, there was like a nice music video. They did it up really, really right. That song in that section of the movie and the video captured the spirit of Philadelphia more than like the whole movie did. Like the rest of the movie thought, oh, well, they're just kind of setting it in Philadelphia.
Right.
But
it
That's felt what was
like,
weird.
But it felt like Philadelphia when Bruce Springsteen was singing.
It wasn't it weird that movie was called Philadelphia and then the song was Streets of Philadelphia when the movie, it's like, it could have, didn't matter. That
didn't matter where
I think
was.
Because it's the city of brotherly love and we are seeing that there wasn't much.
So it was a bad gay joke. Is what you're saying.
Not a lot of brotherly love.
It was a bad gay joke. That's why they did it.
All I know is,
you know, we should cast this man.
Chris Mancini brought AIDS into this podcast. Isn't that Jason Robards says about that? That's my Jason Robards.
It's really fantastic.
No one does it. No one does it, Robards.
That's my Jason into our washroom.
Well, I'm Jason Robards, and I don't like this guy.
Who's that?
Obviously,
that was Tom Hanks.
It's Tom Hanks. That was gay Hanks.
It was Tom Hanks doing a gay impression of Ronald Reagan. As Woody Allen in What's Up, Tiger Lily.
Okay, you are up.
Okay.
And with this.
Okay, yeah, I thank you, Pat. In sort of, this is the dramatic version of what Woody Allen did with Loving Spoonful and What's Up, Tiger Lily.
I just saw Pat do finger dancing, so I can't wait to hear what this
song
is.
Yeah, this is great. Bruce Springsteen is a finger puppeteer, and he...
the Elmo story.
Stanley Kubrick takes a classic old movie from a musical. He takes Singing in the Rain and then puts it in Clockwork Orange, which is this sort of
dystopian
future, this sort of scathing view of where we're headed. And he does this in 1971. We're such a violent culture, and he does this, and crime is out of control. And so he plays, you know, Singing in the Rain during this really horrible home invasion, and Malcolm McDowell plays this just lunatic with his like evil buddy. So I love what he does of taking a film that's Singing in the Rain, which is just such a fluffy musical.
20 years earlier, 1952.
Gene Kelly just a great, it's, which is a great film. Singing in the Rain is a great movie.
Yes.
And puts it, I love seeing that contrast, because it's sometimes when a filmmaker uses a film, uses music to kind of, I get a little annoyed when they try to tell me what emotions I'm supposed to have a little too much. Put the song.
You mean when your therapist tells you that.
I wonder how Gene Kelly felt when he saw this. Probably did not care for it.
I wonder if he saw it.
Probably, I don't know. He might not have cared. I don't know. I would have been curious to know what Gene Kelly thought of this. But it's,
I think kind of everything seems okay with Gene Kelly. Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
here's my Gene Kelly. It's wonderful.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Let me tell you, it's just Singing in the Rain. It's just wonderful. I just love it. And before we play this, I want to just make sure it's okay with Graham. Graham, I got the original 1952 version sung by Gene Kelly. That's...
I wanted the word version sung by the Gene Blossoms.
Oh.
Come on.
Did you say the Gene Blossoms?
The Gene Blossoms.
They're a Gene Kelly cover band.
Yeah, yeah, all yeah. Five guys dressed like Gene Kelly playing Gene Blossoms hits.
I would do that. I would see that band in a
high. I would too.
Great like dancing.
Singing in the rain. Now we're bopping around, but really on screen,
this family's getting brutalized.
Well, that's the thing that's going on. That's why it's so brilliant, because you can't help but bop your head to this. So he's making the audience so uncomfortable, because we've sort of stylized violence in our society, and isn't it cute and funny?
All right, we get it, Professor.
I want 500 pages on this.
What's sad is that, like, over time, that movie is still, it's still, like, shocking in some ways, but in other ways, I think I saw it as a teenager, and I was just like, yeah, whatever. Like, it's not, it doesn't have the intended effect anymore, because movies did get more and more violent.
Well, for you, because you're dead inside, Matt.
Yeah, yeah, obviously. Well, that goes without saying, as we all are, for my generation.
No, seriously, the Gene Blossoms are going to be playing next weekend.
That's the greatest. Bring your one eye that was tattooed.
I can't believe we're actually getting through all the songs. Yeah. Mancini, you are up.
Yes, this...
I love saying Mancini. Yeah. I don't know.
means soundtrack.
Hustle and Flow.
Yes.
This is Hard Out There for a Pimp. And the reason I picked this is because, first of all, it's a good song. But when they won the Academy Award, it was the most excited I'd ever seen a musician in my life. And I was like, you know what? They deserve it. This is like, that's how, and even Jon Stewart, when he went up back up to the podium, went, now that's how you accept an award.
Yeah.
And when they performed it live, there was like 1,000 people on stage.
Yeah.
Yep. And they were up against a song from Beethoven's Fourth called Puppy Cakes.
Yeah. You know it's hard out here for a pimp when he's trying to get his money for the rent. For the Cadillac and gas money spent. We'll have a whole lot of bitches jumping shit. In my eyes, I done seen some crazy things in the street. Got a couple hoes working on the chain just for me. But I gotta keep my game tight like Kobe on game. Not like taking from a hoe, don't know no better. I know that ain't right. Done seen people killed, done seen people deal. Done seen people live in poverty with no meals. It's fucked up where I live, but this is how it is. It might be new to you, but it's been like this for years. It's blood, sweat, and tears when it comes.
I have a question. I don't know if you guys know, because you guys know a lot about movies and stuff. What, like, the year this was nominated, there were only 3 songs nominated. And the songs In the Deep from by Kathleen York from Crash, Traveling Through from Transamerica by Dolly Parton. But, I mean, why isn't there 5 songs nominated every year anymore?
They probably have to meet some threshold or something, right, of total votes.
I'm not sure. It might even be a little more arbitrary than that. Or it doesn't make, like, a certain amount of votes. But, I mean, I think there should be. I think there should be.
Yeah, there should always be 5 songs. Yeah. I mean, like, the year that The Wrestler was out, that Springsteen song was not nominated. And I don't even know what year that was, but only like 3 songs were nominated, so Travis, it's weird.
Yeah. But Chris, I want to applaud that choice. That was a good, like, it would have been so easy to go to Corny Town, you know, when you're making a movie about rap music. But that felt very authentic, and it was a strange twist on like kind of that Thing You Do story of
exactly.
A musician trying to make it. Like, wow,
that's 7 years ago already.
And why am I rooting for this guy?
Yeah,
right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, very
but,
much.
But yeah, 7 years ago already.
I like that DJ Qualls. He's he looks like he's going to pass out at any time. He doesn't seem robust in any way. Yeah, that was cool, man. Okay,
G-loose.
I'm going to go there. This is teen movie anthem from the 80s, written by the same guy who wrote What a Feeling. I bet you didn't know that.
Bam, bam, bam. I didn't know that.
Offered this song to The Fix. They said no. Offered it to Billy Idol. He said no. With his lip up. Offered it to Brian Ferry. He said no. And finally, they're like, Simple Minds, I guess? And they said yes. And they said, hey, hey, we'll do it.
John Hughes makes the cut.
Everything inside and out, and love strange, so real in the dark. Think of the tender things that we were working on. Slow change may pull us apart. When the light gets in your heart, baby, don't you?
So we all know this one.
Yeah.
I think, it just captures that teenage feeling of just everything seeming so end of the world and profound. And
if you grew up in the 80s, when you hear the song, you just think of sitting in class.
Yep.
You know, and seeing in your high school.
Right.
Yeah, all those John Hughes movies were shot in the North Shore of Chicago where I was going to high mm-hmm. school. And so it was like I had some people I went to school with that were in some of those movies. Oh, wow. And they were all it was
Breakfast Club.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Did he capture the feel of that area?
Yeah, he did. Perfect. He very much did. I mean, and the whole, like, you know, there's a lot. It was called the Suicide Belt because these rich parents were all, like, professionals who were like, you got to get into Ivy League schools and you got to get good grades and all this stuff. So all these wow. kids were offing themselves.
Jeez. So weird to think he's gone, too. He's
I know.
Yeah. He had much more to give.
How old was he when he died?
He was not that old.
I'd say 58 or
yeah.
something.
Yeah, he was young. But he had stopped making movies years before.
Yeah,
he would like script doctor stuff, right? Or write stuff under assumed names.
Yeah. And then he kind of.
It was Drill Bit
completely.
Taylor. That's what did him in. Drill Bit Taylor.
Drill Bit Taylor,
actually,
that's right.
One of the things that he said that was the most disappointing to him was Curly Sue. When when that movie didn't really do well, he felt like that was one of his best movies, and then he was like, you know,
that's not one of his best.
Well, that's what he was.
That's what
in his mind he was. He really wanted that one to do well, and it didn't. So he just kind of started losing his passion for it.
Wow,
talk about a master of soundtracks, though. I mean,
I know,
yeah.
One of the great. He should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame just for having brought all these artists into the public consciousness.
Yeah,
and probably and a director that knows how teenagers think and can
right.
relate
yeah.
to him. He was remarkable. Filmmaker.
Oh, and this reminds me on the Please Like the Rock Solid page, because someone had some great information about the Pretty in Pink soundtrack that I'm not going to like regale you all with it here now, but there's just some interesting facts about it that he's kind of a honk for OMD. He always tries to interject OMD into the conversation mm-hmm. and interesting stuff, but please like us on Facebook, and while you're on the computer, write a little review on iTunes.
Gary, we're not wrapping the show up. Were you wrapping the show up?
I'm done. I'm going. No, but I was just.
He's done.
We're going to play one more.
I was just remembering. We got one more round to go. That was my last song, but now. Yeah.
I'm going to skip my next one because I'm not going to take the abuse.
I actually like that song.
I do too, but I'm not going to. I'm going to
tell it.
No, because I want to jump to my last one because it's better.
But you know what? But Gary has that same. You guys picked the same one.
Which one?
Your last one. So why don't we use that as a play out?
How about you give? He said he's done.
I'm done.
Oh, you're done.
Yeah.
Well, the one we're not going to hear was you know, if you have kids and you see a kids movie and sometimes there's a great song in it, and I love the song from Shrek 2, Accidentally in Love, but don't play it.
Oh.
By the Counting Crows.
I like that song.
I got no beef with that song.
Here, let's hear it.
What?
So she said, what's the bad gin blossoms shit?
That's what it sounds like.
Turn it on.
Like
but my next song is from a movie that I'm hoping everyone liked, a movie called Once.
Yes.
And this is a song called, Academy Award winning song called Falling Slowly.
Take this sinking boat and port it home. We've still got time. Raise your hopeful voice. You have a choice.
Just got a chill. Did you really
yeah,
get a chill?
So bad.
Because I did get a chill.
Love it. Glenn Hansard, and Marketa Irglova.
Known as Swell Season.
Swell Season.
Yeah. What they're known as now. And, they were up against Menken and Schwartz. Had three songs in it that year, all from Enchanted. Suck it, Menken and Schwartz. Because some no-names are going to rock your world.
What's so awesome about that? Like, most of the things we've heard, they're like movies with songs, you know, designed for the movie. That once is like an album that a movie was sort made of around, built around. It's so it's a great movie, but it's really like great because the music is so great.
And it was best musical too.
Yeah,
that's
what's
right.
Next? Once on Ice.
This next one is so I had such a hard time finding this song.
Really?
But I found it. And Graham, go ahead.
All right, this is a Bill Conti song, which is already, you know, it's nice. Great. It's from one of my favorite Guilty Pleasures of all time.
It's a great movie. It's great.
It still holds up.
It does. It actually does. I just showed it to Sarah, and she really, we saw the remake, and then I go, you should see the original, and she really liked that one too.
Sure. it's amazing. No, I mean
it does hold up.
It does in the cheesiest after school special way. Of course, we're talking about
Stoned. Scott Baio.
We're talking about Ralph Macchio learning how to become a karate master by painting fences.
Right.
And this is the best song. This is that's played at the end of the big point fighting tournament, which is so funny now that we have cage fighting. It is the sissiest form of
when you think about that was entertaining for children. It was like, oh my god, karate's in this movie. And like, well, it is technically no karate, but what happens is if you tap the other person, you get a point.
so
boring.
Oh my god. And the guy, the head of the Cobra Kai dojo, was a psychopath who was training teenage boys to be murderers. And this is how Ralph Macchio defeats them, is with the help of this song.
Yes,
Joe Esposito.
I don't know if you can tell, this is in the 80s. I don't know if that gives it away.
What?
Did Frank Stallone sing this?
Joe Esposito.
You're the best! Around. Nothing's ever gonna keep you down! You're the best! Around.
Yeah, this is the montage where you see his name move up the ranks.
Yep.
Yeah.
It makes me want to have
sweep the leg.
Yeah, it makes me want to sweep the leg.
Sweep the leg, but Sensei, I can beat him. You have a problem with that?
Do you think that
get him a body bag?
Do you think they tried to get like a popular artist of the time to record it? I mean, like Survivor didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe Esposito does it.
Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly what happened.
Rick Springfield didn't want to do it.
Loverboy.
Loverboy. I know. You think anyone who turns down a soundtrack?
Well, Conti knew.
Crocus didn't want to do it.
Bill Conti knew not to call Springsteen because he kept asking him if he wanted to be involved in the Rocky soundtrack.
No.
You know what? He asked me Rocky 1, 2, 3. I said no.
I think they asked Woody Allen.
Oh, did
I don't really do
it. It's clarinet.
A song for a movie with a number.
Yeah.
This is Manhattan 2.
It's a great. Also, and then if you want to have fun, Google Sweep the Leg Johnny, which is a song, a music video that came out like a year or so ago. And it's a hilarious song saying that Johnny, who lost to Ralph Macchio, is living in a trailer and his life is
over.
Oh,
yes, I did see that.
It's hilarious. Yeah. It is worth watching.
I say terrif.
Yeah.
Chris, you're going to... Mancini is going to close it out.
This is a
Chris, let me give you a hint to the song you're going to play.
Yes. Crow. This is a song from the movie The Crow, and the reason I picked it is because The Crow is such a bleak, dismal movie and violent movie, and the song is actually hopeful, and that's kind of like, personally, that's my formula for a great time at the movies. 90% dismal, 10% hopeful.
Yes.
And then I'm very entertained.
Describe this show.
Yeah. And this is called It Can't Rain All the Time.
I hear pound feet in the streets below, and the women cry, and the children know that there's something wrong. It's hard to believe that love will prevail.
Seems a little Lilith Fair for a kick fest, but it's, it makes sense.
I will. I got to tell you, for a bunch of dudes that haven't showered, we pulled out some emotional tunes.
We're in touch with outside.
I'm telling you, we were thinking outside the box. There was no Footloose, no Top Gun, no Bee Gees in there. We didn't go the normal. Not a lot. Only one John Hughes song. We didn't really. We didn't go that route.
We should probably do this again then.
We should definitely do it again.
There's a lot to mine there. Yeah,
there is a lot to mine.
You guys are going to be in Philadelphia, I think, the week this drops, I believe.
September 5th through the 8th, we'll be at Helium Comedy Club the Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. I'm headlining, Chris is featuring, and on September 6th, we're doing a live Comedy Film Nerd podcast recording. Just go to either, go to comedyfilmnerds.com or grammo.com or heliumcomedy.com.
Get there.
Do you guys have a quick movie trivia question you'd like to shout out and so that people could win a copy of your book?
God, I'm glad we didn't talk about this before we recorded.
You don't just have movie trivia questions in your head.
Well, let's think of a specific movie we might have talked about today.
All right, you have to name the movie that George Clooney repeats. That he repeats this line over and over. Take the shot. Take the shot. Take the shot. What George Clooney movie is that?
Okay, and then they should email the answer to.
To info@comedyfilmnerds.com.
And you will get an autographed copy of our new book, Comedy Film Nerds Guide to Movies.
The first one that has the right answer.
First person has the right answer. Yeah.
So we will timestamp it.
It pays to listen to Rock Solid. As I was mentioning earlier, thanks to everybody on the Facebook. Everyone get involved there. It's a lot of fun every day. And write a review, please, and tell all your friends how much.
Listen to the Comedy Film Nerds podcast
please
as well.
That while you're there.
Like them.
And the
write
LA,
a review.
LA Podcast Festival, October 12th through 14th. Never Not Funny will be on it. And lapodfest.com. Get your tickets
now. Available.
Do it. I have a play out. When you said the first song you played, Pat, reminded me of this. That thing you do, you were saying kind of like that song had to be good for that movie to work. This is another example of like watching this movie. I was like, this movie is just kind of okay, but when it had to do one thing really, really well to be watchable, and I feel like it nailed it. This is from 8 Mile. This is actually the
Joe Esposito.
This is the final rap battle from the movie 8 Mile, which you're like the whole time you're like, is this guy like you're kind of rooting for him, but he's an underdog. He's like this white guy trying to succeed in like a world of like underground hip hop, and everyone knows Eminem, but like it's still exciting when he actually destroys this guy at the end, and it's like it's really cathartic.
One of the reasons is because it's not like an actor playing a rapper. You realize he really can rap.
And he probably went through that shit.
I think this is I mean it was based on his
and
life story.
Middle America roots for him because he's white.
I don't even know if this song this doesn't have a title really. This is just the last scene in the movie.
All right.
Four, one pop, two pop, three pop, four pop, three pop, two pop, one, your pop, he's pop, your pop, none.